Hello, and welcome to the Southern Fried Security Podcast. I am your host, Joseph Sicoli, and I am joined tonight by my good friend, back from DerbyCon, Mr. Steve Reagan. Steve, how are you doing tonight?
Greetings and salutations. I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is finally fall in Baltimore, and it is magnificent. It is a balmy 60 degrees outside. The leaves are kind of blowing around already. This is my favorite time of year by far.
Dude, my furnace kicked on the other night, and I'm not going to lie, it freaked me out. I'd forgotten what the sound of the furnace was, and so when it kicked on, I was like, oh God, what is that? And then it dawned on me, and I was like, oh, well, I feel really dumb now. But yeah, that was pretty awesome. I like this time of year. It's decent.
Wait, your smart thermostat didn't talk to your smartphone and smartly remind you that the smart furnace was kicking on?
Yeah, I just recently replaced the one with mercury in it, okay? The smart one that I have runs on AA batteries, and it's just digital. That's it.
Well, tonight is just the Steve and Joe show. Mr. Willingham is... His whereabouts are unknown. Same with Yvette. We wish them well, as always. So first things first, how was DerbyCon?
It was awesome, man. Of all the cons, too, I mean, it's kind of hard to have favorites, but if I had to pick one, I'd probably say Derby anyway, just because it's on my travel schedule. Derby is usually the last thing I do at the year, which means, you know, the living out of a suitcase and everything like that, it's reached its end. And all of my friends are at DerbyCon. So seriously, it's really cool. And then after that, of course, it's Vegas, because I love going out to Vegas. That's probably my favorite work trip of the year, but DerbyCon was amazing. I got to stay at the hotel this year, so I didn't have to walk
several
blocks to get to the con. Yeah, I just got in the elevator and went downstairs, and it's a different experience, actually. Saturday night, give you an example. I worked for a little bit, hung out, saw a couple talks, and I got tired, so I was like, well, I'm just gonna go take a nap. Well, my 1 or 2 hour nap turned out to be, you know, like 6 or 7. I woke up, it's like 3 in the morning, so I stumbled downstairs, and it's 3 a.m. on a Saturday. Where is everybody? There's like no one. And I'm just kind of hanging out, wandering around. And then all of a sudden, like, just everybody shows up at like 4 a.m. The lobby fills up again. I was like, wow, where'd you people come from? So they're like all tired, trying to get bed. And I'm like full of energy and awake, trying to convince people to go out. And it was hilarious. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I can't say anything bad about it. The talks were really good this year, too. So
excellent. That's excellent. Yeah, I was really disappointed I missed it. And that makes it, I believe, 2 or 3 conferences in a row now that I have missed your media training talk or a workshop. So one of these days, I'm going to get you to just give me the private workshop so that I can finally say I've been through your media training.
You know, we could turn it into an episode one day. That'd be pretty cool.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
Make it like a little special episode that's just, you know, in addition to whatever.
We don't get
in trouble. I'd do it.
Yeah.
I like doing that class. That class is amazing. That's Jen and I work really well, because her job is to train people to avoid people like me. And my job is to convince people that, you know, the friendly communications person that's trying to help you, just ignore them. Do as I tell you. It's awesome. It's perfect yin and yang in the classroom. It's just great.
Excellent. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and get started on our topics tonight? So it is October, and there is nothing going on.
Which is ironic, because this is the National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, safety awareness.
Clearly, everybody is already aware of cybersecurity, and they are cybering securely and stuff.
Phrasing.
There have been a few breaches, but frankly, I don't know about you, but I'm just kind of tired of talking about breaches and things. So I thought I would focus a little on something a little different tonight. And that is that as of today, yesterday, the 9th, on October 9th, LastPass announced that they had been purchased by LogMeIn. So LogMeIn, if you don't know, is a remote connectivity service, much like, I guess, TeamViewer would be another competitor of theirs.
Yeah.
So it's a service. You sign up for it. You put a little agent on your desktop. You have remote connectivity from pretty much anywhere. And I've used LogMeIn in the past, and they have had, they've made some changes to their billing and things. Well, now they have purchased LastPass, and LastPass was breached back in July. It exposed master password hashes and things like that. And Troy Hunt, has written a article titled LogMeIn Now Owns LastPass. Here's how to migrate to 1Password, which I thought was pretty hilarious. Because, you know, he goes on to talk about how important reputation is for things like password managers. Mm-hmm. And LastPass joining the LogMeIn family has actually damaged their reputation. I would probably say it damaged their reputation significantly more than the breach did.
Yeah.
So I thought we could kind of use that as a jumping off point. So I guess first things first, Steve, do you use a password manager?
Of course, there's absolutely no way I could remember all the passwords I have. In fact, here recently, I was giving a talk somewhere, and somebody asked me about password safety, and I thought it was really funny. If I was to lose access to my password manager, I would be completely cut off from everything. I don't know my Google password. I don't know my VPN password. I don't know my MS password. I don't know any of my email passwords. None of this. Because I actually, you know, I use, let's just say, really long random strings of characters. And there's just no way I could guess them or even attempt to remember them. Now, I do have throwaway passwords. But yeah, I use KeePass, actually, as my password manager. It's mobile. I can put it on, you know, a flash drive, take it with me. I can carry it across, you know, multiple computers. I even have some of it on my phone. It's just, I like that. And when you combine that with two-factor from, like, you know, Facebook and Google and LinkedIn and things like that, and Cisco for the VPN, the two-factor along with the password manager is actually a perfect solution for me.
Excellent. So I personally, like Troy recommends, I use 1Password. And it's interesting.
Isn't that the standard for Mac users, though? I mean, it
I was just about to bring that up, which it does seem like 1Password. I'm gonna be honest here. 1Password stuff is fantastically designed and integrates beautifully into the iOS and Mac ecosystem. They put a lot of work into it. They use Touch ID for all of my iOS devices, which I love because, frankly, I'm tired of typing passwords, and I really wish I had Touch ID for my Mac at this point. So, and I actually use a Dropbox syncing. I use Dropbox for syncing the 1Password master list. And it's funny, I actually ran into this the other day where it occurred to me that the password for Dropbox is contained in 1Password. And I was setting up Dropbox fresh on a new on my new work computer, just long enough to get the master password file. And it occurred to me that I couldn't figure out how to log into Dropbox because 1Password wasn't there, because Dropbox wasn't there, because 1Password wasn't there. and I kind of went around for a few minutes.
Somewhere right now, you know, we're like 3 or 4 minutes into this, and somewhere right now, someone's like having a conniption fit, rolling on the ground, just foaming at the mouth, screaming "OPSEC." That's what they're doing right now. Because between you and I, we basically told everybody who's listening right now how to cripple us in our workflow.
Right, exactly. You cut off Dropbox, you take me right out at the knees. You know, but. So I've been kind of thinking a lot about 1Password managers in general, and Troy's post and the kind of the LastPass acquisition has kind of brought it up. So back in the funny thing is that when I saw this post from Troy, it made me think of, I keep a running list of stories that I find interesting for the podcast and things like that. And actually back in July, what is this? The 26th, I dumped a link into my file and I had totally forgotten about it. And it's from Wired. It's titled "Websites, Please Stop Blocking Password Managers. It's 2015. As I was rereading through this, I was like, oh, maybe we could tie this in here. Troy is actually quoted again in this article, and it's discussing how T-Mobile blocks password managers, and also Barclaycard, and there's been a few other British Gas, a few other companies have recently been found where, when they say they're blocking password managers, what they're really blocking is copy-paste functionality. So you can't copy and paste into a website, which is how password managers work, right? You have this big, long, unrememberable password. The password manager copies it and dumps it in.
Sometimes they also do autofill, but again, there are websites that autofill just doesn't work completely on. You know, like it'll fill out the wrong fields in the wrong order or something like that, and you need cut and paste, which is, you know, why this is a huge problem.
Right. And, you know, I thought that was interesting. And frankly, when this article came out, I remember thinking, yes, please stop blocking this functionality. Because as the article on Wired points out, blocking copy-paste isn't how you brute-force an account, right? Or copy-pasting is not how you brute-force an account, basically, ever. It's all about using scripting and things. You and I were talking
offline, and it was one of those things to where, like, again, with the cut and paste functionality was truly believe the last time that was like a mass marketed feature for Chrome's Kube Face back in like 2005, 2004. And it's nobody uses it these days. I mean, if you've already got malware in your system, the last thing you need to worry about is cut and paste. So, I mean, that banks in particular, or, you know, telecoms are blocking this, just seems to defeat the purpose of, you know, any kind of statement of security and protection they want to offer their customers, because you're literally limiting one of the best things that's ever happened to identity management in a long time for the average consumer. And you're just cutting them off right at the knees. There's no way you can cut and paste. And now that I'm looking at it right here in front of me, I've logged into my gas company here locally. And I can't use cut and paste on their website. I'm looking at the source code. The JavaScript is literally right there, and it's funny. I can't possibly think of why they would stop me from doing that. What conceivable purpose would this serve? Nobody's going to be able to disable my. You can't turn off my gas from the website. First of all, you have to call in. You can port an outage. You could pay my bill for me. I'll let you do that. But there's no reason at all to block, cut, and paste, and that's exactly what they've done. So yeah, this is, it's 2015. Let it go. Just stop. Just stop.
Yeah. But, so sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to ask. We were also talking about like the use of password managers and other places. So
right, and that you and I are right on today. So one of the things that we were kind of talking about this, you know, before the show is, so here's the interesting thing is like I discussed, I went through this rigmarole to get my master password file over to my work laptop. And here's what I found. I use my 1Password vault to input a password on my work machine once a week, maybe. Yeah, that seems about right. Maybe once a week, maybe every other week, depending on what I'm doing. And the reason for that is the fact that we have really good corporate identity management, where I have a single password that authenticates me throughout the organization to many of our internal services, to pretty much every internal service that I need to get access to. So, I was thinking back, and In my last couple of jobs, it's been pretty much the same way, where I haven't had to remember multiple passwords because we had some sort of single sign-on or identity management or Active Directory integration or something along those lines, where I found that I wasn't entering passwords much in a corporate environment. So, you know, as I was thinking about password managers, I was kind of thinking, so what's the impact when we start talking about password managers like this? What's the impact on the corporate environment? Is there really a need for a password manager when you're in a corporate environment for the majority of users?
And so as we worked through that topic, I mean, the point we came to was yes and no. It's really going to depend on the organization. And here's why. So in a large enterprise environment like where Joe works, SSO is perfect. And that's exactly why they've implemented it. In these smaller environments where I come from, you had, you know, your Active Directory credentials. So that logs you into the network. That'll log you into your email. But for example, over in HR, they had their Active Directory credentials, but then they also had ADP credentials they had to worry about. They had Cigna credentials to manage all the healthcare stuff. None of those identities were connected to their corporate identity. These were each separate things. So in that case, a password manager would be highly useful. And actually, I would encourage it in an environment like that. But it's also, there's a second layer here that you can look at. People at work do things that aren't work related. So they're going to log into their Facebook. They're going to log into their personal email. They're going to log into apps and other things like this. And in the event that their personal stuff gets compromised, using a password manager would actually make it harder for the attacker to compromise anything on the corporate level. Knock on wood, if somebody was to compromise a HR person's, you know, password file that they've got on their desktop, because again, when you have these multiple IDs that are connected, they usually store them in a text file or an Excel document. You know, that's it. That's game over. You know, right. You get their personal stuff and their work stuff. But if their work stuff's in a password manager or a vault, it's encrypted and it's extremely hard to get that data out. I'm not going to say it's impossible, because the second I do, somebody will do it. But it's not going to be worth the effort on the attacker side. So you're actually giving yourself some protection, and that works both ways as well. Because if you give password managers to, you know, employees, they're going to put their personal stuff in there as well. And if they put their personal stuff in there, well, that gives them that little added protection while they're at work. Nobody's snatching passwords from them, and that's a good thing. But again, it's really going to depend on the organization and how you want to manage this stuff. You can't force everybody to do it. But then again, if you make it a policy and password managers become a regular thing, the bleed over effect is they get so used to using them at work, they want to use them at home. And most corporate password managers are freely available to consumers. So they can use the same tool in both places. And they're already familiar with it, which is why LastPass did so well. They actually had corporate versions. And I don't know, the news that they got bought by LogMeIn was a little disappointing for me, because I can't honestly say that they're horrible. I wouldn't not recommend them. But like, for example, if I know you use a Mac, I'm telling you to use 1Password. I'm not going to suggest anything else to you. Now, I didn't know it integrated so well, which is even cooler.
Yeah. And I believe actually you can host on 1Password, if I remember correctly. You can also do things like Wi-Fi syncing between devices, so you're not actually dumping your vault in other places. I could have sworn they have the way to self-host a syncing file as well. Now
I use, like I said before, I use KeePass, and we don't have the cool syncing things KeePass users don't. The way it's constructed, it's very lightweight and portable, so I can literally on a 512 flash drive just walk around and have that. And it's you know, when you set it up like you're supposed to and you do all the security steps, I can lose that flash drive right now and nobody's getting my accounts. I'm perfectly confident with that. I mean, I would be really upset if I lost that flash drive, but I'm not going to like completely freak out over it. But yeah, it's the reputation is going to be a big factor with me, and in all of my interactions with the developers at KeePass. I mean, it's a great group of people, really, really smart. They genuinely care about the product and the people using it. So, I mean, that was the big selling point for me. You know, I'm
right
fan of open source anyway, but I don't know. LastPass was something I had my parents use because they can get it, if that makes sense. I mean, it's literally click, go. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't hard for them to use at all. And now I'm actually considering teaching them how to use KeePass, just because I don't want them stuck with this.
And, you know, to be fair to LogMeIn, there was a pretty lengthy period, in which they phased out their free plan. If I remember correctly, they announced like limits to it. Literally, we're talking like 5 years ago, and then it was, I want to say 2 years ago, they announced they were going to stop the free, and I probably, and again, this is totally off the top of my head, but I think it was about a year ago that they kind of killed all of the free accounts.
Yep. Maybe January of 2014, to be exact.
Hey, look at that. You know, so if they were to do something similar to LastPass, yeah, it would be incredibly disappointing, but I would hope that they would at least give users the time to get out of there.
You would think, but a lot of the people dumping LastPass right now are doing so because they don't trust that they would get that warning.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the issue. It's not that they wouldn't. It's just the users don't trust it. And when you're in a product-based business and you lose the trust of your consumers, that's it. You're done. There is no way to come back from that. And what's really interesting is even after the breach, they still had their trust. They didn't really, you know, they didn't really lose trust. And then I don't know. It's just everything I've been in. I've followed a couple people and a couple of conversation threads on this, and everybody, it's always goes back to the same point. They simply don't trust LogMeIn. And that's devastating. It really is. And that, I don't know of any type of advice or any other way to try to end that statement on a cheery note, because there's not. They lost their trust, and now they're going to suffer for it. It's horrible, but that's the reality of the situation, and that's why people are starting to dump it. Yeah. But again, these are people saying, you know, this is all talk at this point, that they're going to leave. How many users have actually stopped using the service? That would be my question.
Yeah. And you know, I know,
will there be an impact to the paid side of this?
Yeah, and I know I sound like a shill for 1Password. It is rare for me to find a product that has worked so well so consistently, particularly when it comes to a password manager like that, which is why I kind of recommend them.
Well, but then again, I couldn't argue that you're being a shill, because I honestly thought 1Password was strictly for Mac, and that's exactly what it was created for. Like, I did not realize that, you know, there were something outside of Apple's control. So, I mean, it's the only password manager I would ever tell an Apple user to use. I would never even think of something else. And it's because everybody I've ever talked to loves this program.
By the they do have Windows and Android integration. I use Windows.
Do we get all the cool features you get? I mean,
yeah. I don't know about the fingerprints and stuff for Android stuff. I don't know which devices. I know some of the Samsung stuff has fingerprint readers at this point, but I don't know if they do the unlocking the same way. But all of the syncing and stuff, yeah, that works in Windows as well.
Might be worth looking into.
Yeah, and their prices, if you keep an eye out, their prices are, one, not unreasonable for a service that I use dozens of times a day, but also, it's a one-time cost.
Yeah.
The iOS apps are free, totally free. You can upgrade them later, I think, if you want some extra features, like multiple vaults and things like that. I've been pretty pleased with my service. Plus, they have a really fun social media account that if you ever tweet about them, they tweet you all sorts of nice things. And again, that totally goes right back to that reputation thing, which is I can watch them, reach out to me if I have a problem, or reach out to other people who I also, who I might follow. I might see the conversation. I've seen people working through support things, and they have responsive developers. They're constantly updating the app, just constantly making stuff better.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm looking at their website right now.
Yeah.
The Windows version does everything you talked about. Oh, yep. That's amazing. What's the store? What's the license? What is this here? You get the little license terms, try before you buy, so you don't have to pay right off the bat. That's cool.
So I do want to, and actually, as we kind of talk about consumer devices and things like that, I want to kind of switch gears a little bit to a story that had kind of slipped past me. As we were kind of talking about consumer devices on the last episode with Guillaume, and now on October 5th, Mudge has announced that he has received a DARPA grant to kind of put together a consumer reports style organization to focus on the cybersecurity stuff in consumer devices. And I rather like this idea. I don't know if it necessarily addresses the core problem, which is that people are developing insecure Internet of Things devices. But by giving things kind of a rating system and a little bit of outside accountability, honestly, from somebody who knows what they're doing, especially with the size of the DARPA grant, which was, what, $500,000?
Yeah, $499,935. I mean, seriously, was it that hard to round it up to $500,000? You couldn't just give the kid a few extra bucks and just call it a day? What's going on here?
But, you know, I with this sort of bootstrapping from DARPA, I think it'll be interesting to kind of see where this goes. And I really like the idea of more of a consumer focus on security. Because I think it's a critically underserved portion of, you know, of the growth of Internet of Things devices.
So I think what he's got coming up now, which is based on the Underwriters Laboratories model, that combined with this consumer report thing, it'll be good. But my only problem is, will anybody use it? Will it be, you know, UL is a thing that is damn near mandatory pretty much everywhere you look, but forever. So how long will it take for this to gain that kind of traction? Will it gain that kind of traction? And I mean, I don't know. It's a good project, but we've got so much wrong with security right now. Do we really need something else that's going to tell us everything that's wrong with security? Why can't we just fix things? Because, and here's the frustrating, like, banging my head into the wall moment for me. Even when you tell, you know, IoT manufacturers that there's something wrong, it's still kind of hard to get them to fix it.
Right.
You know, unless you there's can prove like life or limb. Yeah. Unless you can prove life or limb. They're not in a big hurry. Thanks for your heads up. Yeah, we'll pay attention to this. Yeah, we'll get around to it. We appreciate your efforts. Have a t-shirt.
Yeah,
and they just go on. You know, and it's this could be a good thing. And I mean, obviously DARPA believes in it because you don't just hand somebody $500,000 for nothing. And yeah, I get the irony and the fact that it's DARPA, but seriously, I mean, that's a lot of money. That's a really good foothold to get something started. But how far will it go would be right. My question. And we won't know until this is up and running for a while. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially as stuff starts coming out. I look forward to, especially if they put together sort of a consumer report style website or
I would
not
that.
Full, not a full on like magazine, but I don't know. I'd love to see some sort of reports doing things like comparing some of the home automation type devices or
home automation, medical devices. You know, this will seem really cheesy, but I was at Best Buy the other night and I saw a stove that actually had IoT capabilities. And I'm just curious, what does that mean? You know, I mean, is somebody going to be turning on the gas while I'm not at home? Is that possible? I mean, but I don't know. You know, something right. like this, they would be able to test that. They would be able to show that, yeah, you know, have confidence in this product. It's fine.
So it'll definitely be interesting to see. It's a neat kind of experiment. And that's really that's really what DARPA is there for, right? Is to find these sort of neat experiments and see how they work out. So with that, I think we have reached the end of our allotted time. Steve, if people wanted to read your writings or get in touch with you, where might they be able to do that?
Easiest way to reach me is Twitter. SteveD3 is the handle. And, of course, I write for IDG, so you'll find me on all of their network, primarily on CSO Online. So
fantastic.
That's where I lurk.
You can find me on Twitter at jsicoli. You can always reach out to the podcast's Twitter feed at sfspodcast. I do keep an eye on it when I'm not in the middle of upgrading Twitter clients and constantly deleting and re-adding accounts. you can find show notes for this week's episode at southernfriedsecurity.com/168. And with that, I think we'll wrap it up. So we'll talk to you guys later.
Night, everybody.